The spring flowers are coming up, and political careers are going down. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
As always, Barry, it's great to be back with you. We're just sitting here waiting for the next shoe to drop on all these interesting things that are going on around us. We're recording on a day we don't normally, on Wednesday. We've done it the last couple weeks. It always seems lately that the later we record, the more stuff that we have and the more analysis that we have to deal with on things that are going on around us. And gosh, things are happening very fast, aren't they?
Well, yes, you can say that. There are a lot of things. Like I said, there are more changes that are happening right now than there are changes in the weather. And everybody knows that's a significant statement to make based on what kind of weather we have.
Well, we do live in Ohio, yes.
That's right. Whereas of yesterday, it was 38 degrees down here, and as of Friday, it's going to be 82. So, okay. we have a lot of fluctuation and variance. But one thing we can always remain sure of is that there always will be weather, right?
That's true. The weather will always, it's the old, I can remember a movie line. So-and-so is like bad weather. He's always with us. But the other person comes along once in a lifetime. That's a great saying, actually, because bad weather is always with us. It doesn't matter how beautiful it gets. At some point, there's going to be a tornado warning.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and the same holds true in politics, Chuck. The ups, downs, ins, and outs, there will always be, regardless of what happens, there will always be a scandal.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's the nature of politics. I mean, we're seeing it here in the national level because, and again, this is something I think we need to unpack just a little. The ongoing saga of Donald Trump is very interesting, and it took kind of an interesting twist this week, from last weekend to this week, when, as supposedly part and parcel of a situation that entertainer has made an allegation that then before President Donald Trump, just multi-billionaire real estate magnate developer, etc., Donald Trump, engaged in illicit activities with this said lady. It just so happens that supposedly this happened about a year after he had married Melania Trump, the first lady, who now is the first lady, wasn't then, but, and right after she had just given birth to their son, Barrett. Okay, whether that is accurate or not really isn't the question that's being asked right now. The question that's being asked right now is, did then-candidate Donald Trump have any role in directing or suggesting or enabling one of his attorneys to reach out to this entertainer and make a payment to this lady of, I think it was $130,000, and have her sign some documents in order to keep her from speaking about the alleged dalliance way back in 2006. Well, that's been beat about in the media for a while now, Chuck, and I think to the only real conclusion we've had so far is that the entertainer has revived her career and is now making a lot more money than that $130,000 making personal appearances at certain businesses, shall we say, across the fruited plain that cater to that kind of entertainment. But what happened this week kind of ratcheted it up another level and created, I think what is a much bigger issue than whether or not a multi-billionaire decided he was going to stray from his marital vows. The special counsel investigating I don't want to even say the Russian collusion, because I think as we keep going here, we're finding there wasn't any Russian collusion.
The alleged
collusion of Russian agents in the United States presidential election in 2016.
I have to disagree slightly.
Okay.
The collusion came in on the other side, in fact.
On the other side, that's right. It doesn't seem like there's any dog in the hunt on the Republican side, on Trump's side. But Robert Mueller, the special counsel, decided to take it unto himself. And again, Chuck, I don't understand how something that happened in 2006, even if the agreement was signed in 2016, I'm not sure how that actually plays into his mandate to investigate Russian interference in the election process. But he seems to figure out that there's a way to do it, because the FBI raided the home and office of the attorney who was working for the Trump team, who supposedly negotiated this agreement with this female entertainer. Now, Chuck, I guess maybe I'm just a little thick, but I'm not sure how, in what way, in any fashion, that Mueller and company can justify the expansion of their mandate to this.
Well, okay, here's how they're getting away with it. They're supposedly investigating this attorney for quote-unquote bank fraud.
Okay.
Now, it's thin as, a newlywed's negligee. It's really thin. There's not much there. However, what it does is, if the attorney supposedly committed this bank fraud at the behest of the client, then it destroys attorney-client privilege. In other words, the attorney committed a felony at the behest of the client. That destroys the attorney-client privilege. That's how they're going after this. Now, what I want to say about that is, folks, if you think that this is in any way the legal system is supposed to work, it absolutely is not. This supposed payment to this entertainer is a giant nothing burger, and it was becoming obvious after the 60 Minutes interview with this entertainer.
Correct.
It's allegation after allegation after allegation. No proof. The woman was obviously not. Let's just say that she enhanced her performance on this interview chemically, it appears.
Okay, now that was explained away, Chuck.
Oh, sure it was.
She had a cold, and she was taking Benadryl.
Oh, come on.
Well, come on. That's the public statement that was made about that, because you were not the only person to point out that there might have been, shall we say, the influence of external pharmaceutical assistance.
Yeah, how many Benadryl must she have taken? A lot.
Well, I mean, apparently how many come in a box?
Yeah. You know, when I was in high school, people used to think you could really get a buzz out of taking a handful of no-dose and drinking a Coke. Well, you can, but it's not the kind of buzz you want. And now kids are doing it to the point where they die. So,
yes, they are, and it's no laughing matter.
No.
But at the very least, they're not trying to get high off of synthetic marijuana and dying from rat poisoning. Oh, wait a minute, that is happening.
Those
are adults that are doing that.
Yeah, so. Well, adults and children, so it's a very sad thing. But that's another topic for discussion. But the fact is that, really, if you examine what's going on here, folks, this is exactly what guys like Barry and I and a number of people that we've worked with over the years since we first met and got together and worked together in a couple of groups have been warning about. I and my family have been warning about this coming for over 50 years. Does that date me? Yes, it does. What we've been talking about is the subtle erosion of the Bill of Rights, specifically the Fourth and Fifth Amendments.
Mm-hmm, correct.
And now, at the same time, we've got the erosion of the First Amendment, because can you really say politically anything you want to say? And the answer is no. So we've got an assault on the First Amendment happening, and especially at the federal level. Now, why do I say that? Well, okay, your attorney is essentially an extension of you. So that mm-hmm. any conversations, paperwork, emails, letters, any form of communication between you and him is what's called privileged. In other words, your attorney has to know certain things, and you have to tell him certain things that could look damaging, even though it may not necessarily be. It could look damaging if taken out of context. And believe me, the first thing a federal prosecutor tries to do is take things out of context. They do not view their job as justice. We're in an adversarial legal system. Unfortunately, the way the legal system's set up, this is what it can turn to, and it has been this way for a long time. We have what's called an adversarial system. And prosecutors don't make a name by going for justice. They make a name by going for convictions.
True.
So what is happening? Well, it's a conviction at any cost. And what's interesting about Mueller's team is he has employed people. In fact, his right-hand man, Robert Mueller's right-hand man, is a man who has been sanctioned by federal judges for, in prosecutorial cases, hiding exculpatory evidence. Now, what is exculpatory? There's inculpatory and exculpatory evidence. What's exculpatory evidence?
I think exculpatory is the evidence that would actually prove your innocence.
Yeah, right? That's exactly right. And this guy is infamous for it. And Mueller actually has a reputation for this. When I hear Trey Gowdy say that Mueller's trustworthy and he can be, okay. Who was a? Do you remember way back in the early days of the whole 9/11 business and the? Do you remember the controversy and the scandal involving someone who was accused of sending anthrax through the mail, a federal employee? Do you remember this way back? I mean, like 2002, 2003, maybe.
That's right.
Around in there. Well, who was involved in basically railroading this poor fellow who eventually, I think, ended up killing himself after it became clear that he had nothing to do with it, even though the federal prosecutors basically had him tied up and ready to go to prison? Robert Mueller was one of those guys. And what did they do? They hid exculpatory evidence. Okay. So this is nothing new for these people. You can look it up while I'm sitting here expounding, because I'm going on memory.
No, that's okay.
Robert Mueller was one of these people. And the fact is that he has packed his team with people who are Hillary Clinton supporters, and some of them former Hillary Clinton confidants when she was at State. And, of course, Obama's Justice Department was not about justice at all. It was about getting the other side. And if you'll notice, everybody's recusing themselves on the Republican side in this investigation. In the Southern District of New York, where this raid happened on Trump's personal attorney, the U.S. attorney, the actual U.S. attorney, was a Trump appointee. He recused himself. Well, this self-recusal is being used as a tool. Jeff Sessions recused himself from the whole Russia collusion thing, and handed it over to Rod Rosenstein, who's an associate FBI. Guess what? Rod Rosenstein's dirty up to his eyebrows. In Hillary Clinton being involved in the Hillary Clinton investigation and giving her a clean bill of health when it became clear that she violated federal law. Look, if you and I worked for somebody like the Defense Department, and we used our personal computers to do those kinds of things. My sister-in-law worked for the Defense Department. And they told, we're told right up front, you do not use your personal computer or a personal network. You have to use a VPN if you're going to work at home. And you have to use one of our issued computers, our secure computers. And you cannot use your own network. And you cannot use your own email system. You have to use ours, period. Because of, for security reasons. And, you know, we live in a modern age when you can easily, you and I, Barry, you and I can go sign up for a VPN. It's called a virtual private network. If you and I sign up for a VPN, nobody knows what your IP address is. They get a fake IP address, essentially. It's a double firewall system.
Yeah.
And you, wherever the VPN is located, that's what it looks like your location is. So in other words, if you go out and look at something, that you don't want anybody to know you've looked at, perhaps you're doing some research on somebody and you don't want the trail to be able to be followed. You sign up for a VPN. Nobody knows really who you are. Anybody who's looking at that address would look at that VPN address and go, oh, that's a VPN. There's nothing we can do about it. We can't puncture it. Hillary Clinton didn't do any of that. She used a server that was in a basement. In a closet in a private IT firm. That's illegal as anything. She was in clear violation, and she destroyed evidence.
Yes.
And yet, she got an excuse letter written by the FBI before they'd even done the investigation.
Oh, boy.
And Rod Rosenstein was involved in this. The same guy who's basically giving Robert Mueller carte blanche to expand the investigation. Well, is it time to investigate the investigators? I think that's becoming clear now.
I would say that's probably goes within, you know, one thing following the other. Yes.
Yes, it's past time. And Congress is just doing a terrible job of oversight. I'll be quite honest. Their job is to oversee this. There are guys in the committee who don't have a high enough clearance to go out and look at the stuff that they're supposed to look at to have oversight. There's something wrong with this picture. Because what it does is it creates an all-powerful agency. Now, there have been arguments for decades that the FBI had far too much power under J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover kept dossiers on people, and it is rumored, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised, that one of the reasons he was able to keep his job so long was because he had dossiers on all the politicians who would have been involved in not renewing his appointment to the FBI. Remember, J. Edgar Hoover ran the FBI for over 40 years. From the 1930s into the 1970s. And they did all surveillance on all kinds of people, politicians and people involved in personal activism and all kinds of things. And he is rumored to have just dirt on everybody. Was this too much surveillance? And the answer is probably yes.
Yeah, probably so.
There were a lot of people in conservative circles who were very, very conciliatory to J. Edgar Hoover because, you know, he seemed to be keeping dossiers on bad players. But I'm not so sure he wasn't necessarily not keeping dossiers on good players. I think he was keeping a dossier on everybody. The FBI, the CIA, anybody who's, and now the CIA is not supposed to be involved in domestic investigations, domestic spying and that kind of thing. Come on, give me a break. Why do you think the intelligence community, the department, why do you think guys like James Clapper, National Security Director of National Security, is such an anti-Trumper? You don't think
something that in the water in D.C. maybe?
Yeah, don't think there wasn't collusion in there to violate his rights? You don't think there wasn't collusion in there when they abused the FISA system, Foreign Intelligence Security, FISA, Foreign Intelligence Security? Can't remember it all. But this was set up after 9/11. This is the whole Patriot Act, folks. This is why some of us, like Barry and I, were in such deep opposition to the Patriot Act. You're watching the Patriot Act play out.
Yes, you are.
From a guy who got elected president of the United States, and there are people who hate him. Now, look, if you want to come to me and say, oh, I don't like Donald Trump personally, hey, guess what? I don't either. I'm not a big fan of him personally. I like what he's doing as the president of the United States. The job that he's doing. When he says he's going to do something, he does it. When he says, I'm going to do this, if this is not done, I will do this. Yeah, for instance, they didn't give him full funding on the wall. He says, look, we're building the wall. So what did he do? He took it out of national defense. Does he have justification for doing that? Oh, absolutely he does. That's our southern border. Are people coming across the southern border who shouldn't be coming across the southern border without going through checkpoints? And the answer is, obviously. So, what do we have? Your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights, and in many cases also other of the amendments, are essentially right now forfeit. Why? Well, because we live in a dangerous world. This is the excuse that you're being given. It's a dangerous world, and we have to do something about it. And therefore, we need to have complete access to your bank and medical records and your emails, and we need to be able to monitor through the Department of Homeland Security every communication that you have, listen to every phone conversation, we need to be able to have surveillance in your home by activating things like your smart TV. And lest people laugh at that, it's already been done. Surveilling through smart TVs hooked up to cable systems. I mean, this is stuff that in the 70s was unheard of, was undreamed of. And now as we live in the 2000s, in the 2010s, going on the 2020s, here we are, folks. We live in a surveillance society. Our friends like ours, like Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center, was warning us about this at Camp American in 2008. He did a presentation. I'm trying to remember which camp it was, but he did a presentation that says our surveillance society, and he talked about cameras. Being constantly on camera and being constantly listened to. Folks, this is playing out now. What you're seeing is the unmasked attempt to bring down a sitting president. Why? Because globalists in the government from both parties don't like him.
That's right.
And they consider him dangerous. Why? Because he threatens their power base. That's the bottom line. That's why Donald Trump is so hated. He's not a globalist. He's an economic nationalist. Now, for some reason, economic nationalists get a bad rep. Everybody wants to go back to, oh, nationalism is dangerous. Oh, come on. It most certainly isn't. What's dangerous is when it becomes radical nationalism, and it's like our nation is the best and nobody else can be possibly good, and therefore we need to spread our nationalism all over the world. Well, we got that with globalism. What do you think the whole thing about globalism is? We're going to make everybody the United States of America. Well, how's nation building worked out when we've tried that? It's been a disaster. Why? Because other nations aren't the United States. They're their own countries.
Yeah,
they have their own set of religious beliefs. They have their own set of customs. They have their own set of societal mores. We can't make them into us. And we shouldn't want to do that.
No, we shouldn't. But we tend to do so anyway. You know, and it's very interesting, Chuck, because, you know, you've got this whole thing. And, of course, you know, Mueller and the FBI are overextending their bounds on this one and doing, you know, things that they shouldn't be doing. And the FBI has been taking an awful lot of flack, you know, ever since the whole thing with James Comey and Rosenstein and you know, and McCabe and the Strzok and Page. And I mean, you can go down the list. The FBI has been taking it on the chin. But I got to give the FBI kudos, though, because there is one area where they are doing their job and doing it the correct way. Just so happens that that is here in Ohio. And for those of you who are waking up this morning and you're not the like hardcore political types, you may or may have not have seen this. Well, as I say this morning on Wednesday, you know, as we record this, that the announcement was made on Tuesday night before a meeting of the House Republican Caucus in Columbus at the State House, that House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger from Wilmington is resigning his seat effective the 1st of May. Why is that happening, Chuck? It's happening because he is under investigation by that same Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI, and they're looking into his travel, his living arrangements, and his access and use of donor monies, caucus funds, and other areas of influence and pay. And it looks like that they may be onto something, because breaking news on, you know, Tuesday afternoon that our friends over at Third Rail Politics broke, because I didn't see this anywhere else and nobody else is saying a word about this, but they broke that there was a special grand jury that has been impaneled in order to issue subpoenas and possibly hand down indictments on this matter with Speaker Cliff Rosenberger. Chuck, if that's the case, and the FBI has enough evidence from their what they've been investigating so far to impanel a grand jury, what does that give you an implication of?
Oh, well, if he's resigning before anything comes out, they got him.
Yeah, that's the big guess here. And again, this is something that, like I said, you know, some of the media has picked up on a little bit. The Dayton Daily actually ran an article, sometime late last year, about this interesting arrangement that Rosenberger had with a major Republican donor by the name of Jenny Reagan, who's an heiress who owns a big company up in the Delaware area. And who has been very much active in writing major campaign checks to not only Cliff Rosenberger, but to the House caucus and to Rosenberger's handpicked successor, Representative Ryan Smith from, well, from here in my area, now outside of Gallipolis. Jenny Reagan's like his biggest single contributor, I think, or something. And you know, she writes like $12,700 checks to these guys like on a regular basis. Because she has the money to do so. And the FBI, I think, is questioning, because it's really was not clear, I guess, from Rosenberger's financial statements and things that he's supposed to file, you know, for disclosure, et cetera, exactly whether or not he was getting a special deal on this condo at, I believe it was Mira Nova. And Chuck, if anybody knows anything about downtown Columbus, Mira Nova is a high-rise, swank condo apartment complex that's right there at the south end of downtown. And, you know, that's not your average family of four, you know, looking for an apartment to stay in for a while. These condos are like multi-million dollar condos. And Rosenberger was staying there and supposedly paying a, you know, fair market value, but I guess that's been called into question. Some of his travel is being called into question. I guess he, at least one of the ones that they're looking at right now is that he took a trip to, I think it was England, and I forget. I mean, there's three or four countries that he took this trip with this, GOPAC, G-O-P-A-C, GOPAC, and this junket with some lobbyists, including a female lobbyist that seems to be in most of the media accounts from South Carolina, who's trying to defend him, I think. And, well, they're questioning whether or not he reported that accurately, or if he, you know, got some kind of benefit from that improperly. I think they're also looking at whether or not, and the rumor around the State House, now this has not come out media-wise, but the rumor around the State House is that part of the reason the FBI was able to get in on this was that Rosenberger had been engaging. Now, again, this is not
allegation. It's an allegation.
This is an allegation. Okay, yeah. This is not a fact. This is an allegation. An allegation was that Rosenberger had been promising certain lobbyists certain results, i.e., steering policy and legislation in order exchange for funds, which is a felony, by the way, and that he reneged on a deal. And then the lobbyist agreed to work with the FBI and wore a wire. And that may be part of why the grand jury's being impaneled. They may actually have the Speaker of the Ohio House of Representatives on tape engaging in illegal activities.
Well, okay, here's what that would have entailed. It would have entailed giving immunity to the lobbyist because what they admitted to was they basically bribed him. I mean, bottom line, that's the admission. We bribed him, and he took the bribe, and he didn't do what we asked him to do.
Well, and usually when the law dog, i.e. the FBI, gets a hold of the tail of one of the rats, that rat starts squealing on the other rats.
Yes, exactly.
And that seems to be, that may have been what the case is here. Now, Rosenberger has stridently defended his innocence, and... You know, who knows? He may be right. He may be able to explain away everything that they're questioning or that they feel might be not on the up and up. And so there is, there's a lot that's still yet to develop out of this. But the biggest thing was that the announcement came last night that he was stepping down. Effective May 1st. Now, again, our friends over at Third Rail, as I'm seeing this unfold last night and watching Twitter feeds and Facebook posts and, going back and forth with some friends of mine who are, more intimately involved in those things, I see Third Rail Politics puts out an urgent update, basically asking why they're letting Rosenberger, who's under a FBI cloud, stay in his office until the 1st of May. In other words, 3 weeks, because they're reporting that they have been told by sources inside the Speaker's office that documents are being shredded inside the Speaker's office.
Wow.
And I'm looking at that and saying, okay, if that's accurate, are they basically, did he set this up so that, well, number one, that means he'll be leaving a week before the primaries are running. Does that mean he wants to stay involved? Because he's been all over the state. Rosenberger has been all over the place backing the candidates that Ryan Smith has recruited in order to get the votes he needs to be speaker against the Perry County Representative Larry Householder, the former speaker who wants to be speaker again. They're in a pretty pitch battle. I mean, it's pretty heated to the point where the media just talks about it constantly. There have been shadow PACs that are running multi-million-dollar attack ads against all of Householder's recruited candidates across the state in these open seats, surreptitiously in support of Ryan Smith's candidates. Well, I just saw something this morning as we were prepping, Chuck. It looks like Representative Householder's fired back, and I mean that in the most literal way possible, fired back. He's now up with a major ad buy. I guess it's $85,000 of TV and radio, where he's basically, and I saw the TV, they put it on their Facebook page. I'm like looking at it, I'm laughing my head off. It's a 30-second spot, but it's Householder basically dressed in camos, which is not unlike him because he's from the country and
yeah.
he's got that DNA. Basically, and he's walking with a camoed shotgun in this field, and out and sitting in the field is a television, and the television's running the attack ad they're using against him. And he basically talks about how he's a pro-gun, pro-life Christian conservative.
I've heard it,
and we know how to use our guns. And he points the shotgun at the television and blows it to pieces. It was one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen. And I thought, wow, that's really giving it back to him with quote unquote both barrels. But this is raising a question, and Third Rail raised this question this morning, and we'll post that up. How far does it go? Is it just Rosenberger? Because funny thing is that during in this, and I went back and read the article, when the Dayton Daily was questioning Cliff Rosenberger's arrangement with this lobbyist for this apartment in at Miranova, what they also divulged was Ryan Smith, the man who would be speaker, who wants to be speaker, also had an arrangement with the same lobbyist for the apartment in Miranova. Now the question is, if the FBI is questioning that, is there grounds for them to start questioning Smith? Who knows? I don't know how far this is going to go. Yeah. They may just stick to, well, you know, Rosenberger was in a position of authority. But then again, you could make the argument Smith is the chairman of the House Finance Committee where all the appropriations are dealt with. He's got just as much leverage as the House Speaker does in order to decide whose nest gets feathered in the budget process. And I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying that there's a question that at least one media outlet has started asking. And the question is, as you're looking at, and I'm looking at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and they have a picture of Rosenberger and the Speaker Pro Tem, Kirk Schuring, who has been announced will take over as Speaker for some period of time after Rosenberger leaves, but they're not sure how long, because there was also some word about the potential of having new caucus elections. And I don't know if that means this spring or when they're talking about it, that Schuring's just going to basically be the speaker until they get past the general election in the fall when it's fairly clear who's got the most votes and the new people get a vote on who the speaker will be for next year. There are some wags in politics that I know who are out there already on their Facebook and other feeds basically saying they think the fix is in, and they think that part of this deal that Rosenberger stepping down was to get Ryan Smith in the speaker's chair before the primaries so that he runs for incumbency against Householder, so that regardless of how it might go, you know, in the primaries between the two speaker candidates, handpicked people running against each other, and who wins the most seats there, that Smith would have that built-in incumbency in order to sway people over to his side. I know it's a little bit more Machiavellian than probably most people want to think about on a lovely day like this, but that's the way it works around Columbus sometimes. But it's going to be interesting to find out, you know, if, you know, with the greater media attention, how things are going to be spinning out here in the near future, if it's going to be a situation where Rosenberger is going to step down even prior to the 1st of May, if the FBI, who knows, you may see the FBI raiding the speaker's office on the 14th floor of the Rife Center. If they think that, you know, that there's a legitimate chance that someone who's under investigation may be potentially destroying evidence. Whether that's accurate or not, I don't know. But I think you're going to be seeing that. Like I said, there's a lot of changes that are happening. And, of course, the first big change would be, does the new interim speaker of the House, Kirk Schuring, does he appoint someone to fill Rosenberger's seat prior to the primary? Because that's one of the hottest, most hotly contested races right now between the Ryan Smith candidates and the Larry Householder candidates. And the question is that would Schuring appoint in the week before the election one of those two candidates to fill the seat? And I would say that, you know, if he was actually, you know, wise about it, the answer would be no. You wait until after the primary, and then whoever wins the primary gets the appointment, because someone will have to be appointed to fill out the term. But that could raise all kinds of hackles. And, of course, you know, the situation is that everything, I think, is in flux now. So anybody who's saying they know so-and-so's got the votes to win speaker, they don't know anymore, because I think that potentially what's going to happen is that there is enough doubt and enough concern among members of the caucus who either are going to be there trying to run for re-election or trying to you know, advance themselves to other seats, that they may decide they don't want to have anything to do with the now potentially disgraced Rosenberger regime, and they may pick a different candidate entirely to elevate to speakership for 2019. It's never a dull moment around Capitol Square.
Yeah, isn't that for sure? Well, it's never a dull moment because nobody just wants to go and honestly do their work.
Well, and that's the thing. I was chatting with a friend of mine who happens to be in the legislature, and we were both, you know, commiserating over the fact that they've done nothing. As a matter of fact, here's the schedule, Chuck. They're going to meet today for the, you know, and there's like a bunch of stuff on the calendar for the House, but very little of it's of any real importance. And then they're going to break and won't come back until after the primary. And then they're only going to be back for maybe 2 weeks, and then they're breaking for the rest of the summer until after the general election. So in other words, we've got maybe 5 actual business days of activity happening at the State House between now and the second week in November. 5 days. Now, we pay these people over $60,000 a year each.
And they want a raise.
And they want a raise. Well, somebody just floated a bill. I just saw it come up. The basically requesting, and it's funny because this was coming from Democrats, which honestly, you know, I got to give them a little kudos on this. Basically requesting that there be a review of the staff salaries, because I don't believe they've been raised in a very long time, and possibly giving the legislative staff a raise. You know, and again, if you're thinking about all the stuff that's going on and all the stuff the legislative staff have to deal with all of these weird things that are happening, and again, there are some allegations, and we've talked about these before, of some of the members of the legislature acting inappropriately with some of the staff.
Oh, yeah.
Sexual harassment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, this is a situation, and I guess I think this also stems off the fact that, and again, this goes back to this whole, you know, arm wrestling match between Smith and Householder, that Speaker Rosenberger was denying requests for leave from staffers who wanted to take a leave of absence. Now, this happens during election cycle, Chuck.
Sure.
It happened back when I was on staff that this kind of stuff happened. You will have staffers that will request leaves of absence from their job at the House to go work on a campaign. And usually they're working for, and normally that's not a big deal because, well, usually the House Republican Operating Committee, the OROC, that's the funding arm of the Republican caucus there in the House, that OROC is basically behind these campaigns, and so these staffers are taking a leave from their public duties at the House to go work for OROC and be assigned to go on and work, whether running a campaign or doing some of the grunt work or specialty work for certain campaigns that the OROC is supporting. Never been a problem before until this cycle when we had this spitting match between Householder and Smith where they're basically both recruiting candidates in open seats. You had staffers who were asking for leaves of absence to go work on these campaigns, and it seemed that the ones who were going to go work on campaigns of Householder-backed candidates were denied leave.
Denied leave, yeah.
But the ones who are working on Smith-backed candidates, they all, as far as I know, and I may be, this may not be accurate because they may have denied leave to some of them too, but from what I've heard, they didn't deny leave for the ones who were going to go work through OROC and work with Smith. And that's the other big problem. That's not historically been the position of that operating committee, is to get engaged and supporting people in primaries. It's to support the incumbents who are in the legislature. But you've got a lot of open seats with a lot of first-time candidates running, and OROC is supposedly out there supporting and backing and paying for mailers and everything else. Candidates who've already pledged that they'll back Ryan Smith in the vote for speaker. There are a lot of members who are upset about that because that's not what the caucus funds are supposed to be used for. They're supposed to be used for defending the seats of incumbents. That's the reason why the speaker goes and asks the member. And, of course, the minority leader does this with his folks, too.
Of course.
They go and they ask each of those members to give a certain amount of money each year to the caucus, to OROC, in the Republicans' case. And, you know, I've talked to some of these members, and, you know, you're talking $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 that they're asking these people to raise and hand over to the caucus so the caucus could then supposedly help them defend their seat when it comes up. But what we're finding is that this current speaker may have also been inappropriately using the funds in OROC to benefit certain candidates over others, which is not the way it's supposed to work. They really have not been used unless an incumbent is primaried. But when you have open seats, there is no incumbent, but they're spending lots of money in these open seats,
which
and
they're
spending
not supposed
it for
to
one
do,
purpose
yeah.
only, and that is to ensure that a certain member who's running for speaker gets the votes across and wins primaries in order to get those votes in the fall, in order to ensure that Cliff Rosenberger's handpicked guy, his ex-roommate at Mironova, becomes speaker.
Well, if you think about it, Barry, if you're trying to discern whether the charges against these people are true or not, you have to take a look at stuff like that and see that if they're willing to act corrupt in a corrupt fashion in a small thing, the chances are they're willing to act in a corrupt fashion in a large thing.
That's right. Well, I think there's scripture about that too. He who is faithful in little is faithful in much, and the counter in the yeah. you know implied contrary to that is he who is unfaithful in little is also unfaithful
yeah.
in much.
The fact is that there, lest you get the idea that we're saying the whole state legislature is corrupt. It's yeah. not. There are good moral people on both sides of the aisle who are frankly appalled by leadership. They remain in because they really think they can beat these guys. They remain in because they know that somebody has to do it. And if it doesn't get done, then the whole place becomes the swamp. I know of some of the state legislators that you've worked with that I've met through you. And some of these guys are really good people. And they're there fighting the good fight. And you know what? They don't get committee chairmanships. They don't get subcommittee chairmanships. They don't get to sit on the committees they want to sit on. They get sat on these joke committees.
Yeah, that's true.
And places where they quote unquote can't do the speaker or his leadership staff any harm.
Right. His and leadership of course, team. Then your friends get put on the plum committees, which would be finance, insurance,
right.
ways and means. You know, the ones that what we call around there, the money committees.
Yes.
The money committees, i.e. you can raise an awful lot of money from the lobby, the health committee, you know, because the medical community will write big campaign checks to get things in law they want. The insurance industry does the same thing. The real estate industry. I mean, you look at these big industries, and that's where the people who are loyal to the current administration end up going.
Yeah, but they end up doing work for once their legislative career is over, too, a lot of these guys end up in lobbying firms. A lot of the more corrupt people end up in lobbying firms, spreading the money around that they used to get spread to themselves. Just watch that. Look how many people are pulling out and are going to go to lucrative, on the federal level, John Boehner, terrible Speaker of the House of Representatives, is now basically making good money as a lobbyist.
And it looks like his successor in that seat, Paul Ryan, is getting ready to do the same thing.
Yeah, since the announcement came. Yep, the announcement
just
came
announced
out
this morning that yep. U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan, who's not under FBI investigation that we know of, has said that he is not going to run for re-election. Funny thing is I'm not sure when Wisconsin's elections are, but they couldn't be any later than June, so him announcing in April that he's not going to run for re-election really doesn't give a whole lot of time for anybody in Wisconsin to line up to run for a seat, unless, of course, it's somebody he'd already been telling this ahead of time and handpicked.
Hand-picked successor. Once again, a handpicked successor. That's the way these guys do it. They mess it up so that an actual swamp drainer can't get in.
Yeah, well, that's their whole goal, is to make sure that they consolidate and keep that power.
Yeah, because the last thing that Paul Ryan wanted to see was anybody drain the swamp. And I can remember when he ran for vice president, everybody, conservatives were all going nuts over this guy. And, oh, look, we're going to get one of our own in there. And I'm like, are you actually paying attention to his voting record? And the answer is no. What do they pay attention to? They pay attention to media hype. The media comes out and says, oh, he's an ultra-conservative, and, you know, he's this and that and another thing, and it's like, an ultra-conservative to the media is anybody who thinks that abortion maybe or maybe not be acceptable and once voted no on a welfare bill. That's okay. That's an ultra-conservative as far as they're concerned. I'm always dumbfounded about people who get the conservative moniker, like Mitch McConnell, Orrin Hatch, all these guys. These guys are not conservatives by any stretch of the imagination. They're globalists, and they are all about maintaining their personal power and making sure that the federal government, you know, all the power concentrates in Washington and is drained out of the states and the local government. After we've just spent about 40 minutes talking about the corruption at the state level, and we say we want to return power back to the states. Well, believe it or not, we can handle corruption locally much easier than we can handle corruption at the federal level.
All politics are local, and you can vote out people more easily at the local level than you can at the federal level.
Exactly. This is why we want to see the power base return back to the states, because as bad as it is in Columbus right now, we can still handle it because these guys are basically causing their own downfall.
Yes, yes, they are.
They're not going to get away with this. We were just talking. I go, the problem is that the way people see it is, well, if we just put the other party in, it'll be much better.
Well, we've seen how that's not working either.
It's not a party thing. It's not a party thing. It's an individual thing.
It's a character thing.
It's a character issue.
That's really what it gets down to. It's a character issue, and I think that's the big issue, especially at the state level here with Speaker Rosenberger. Was I think that his seeking for things that are temporal exceeded his character.
Yeah. Yep. And that's the problem you run into. Some of these guys go in with good intentions, and they forget that they are susceptible to corruption. Everybody's mm-hmm. susceptible to corruption. Everybody. The fact is that there are people who, there's an old Civil War story. Mm-hmm. And I can remember reading this thing, and I kind of laughed about it. And it said there was a guy who was running a department in New Orleans. And New Orleans was occupied by Union troops. And a Southern planter showed up with the most beautiful young woman that this guy who was running this department had ever seen. And what he was offered was, in order to export, they wanted to be able to smuggle out cotton, because they had all this cotton they were sitting on, and it was being boycotted, right? It's being embargoed. So they wanted to be able to get it out. So they came to this Union commander's headquarters, and they offered him $25,000, which was a lot of money in 1863. You know, that was a boatload of money. And they said the affections of this most beautiful woman this guy had ever seen. And finally, you know, he sent them away, and he immediately cabled his superiors and said, I seek to be relieved from my post. They're getting close to my price.
Yeah, exactly. That is hilarious.
Yeah, and unfortunately, these guys have not just gotten close to their price, they have exceeded their price.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that is the problem. You have to recognize where your price point is and know when to walk away from it. And a lot of people don't have the moral fortitude to be able to do that.
It's true.
A lot of people don't really understand where their weak points are, or actually think that they're weak points. And that's a major problem. Biblically, we're supposed to know ourselves and know where our weak spots are and know how to defend ourselves against falling into the pit with our weak spots. And these guys don't know that.
Yeah.
Or they don't care.
They don't, yeah, and that could be the case, too, because sometimes you can become so jaded and so you're calloused to all of it. And honestly, the lure of power and influence and money are strong, especially for people who maybe haven't had enough life experience in order to understand those pitfalls. You know, one of the things that everybody has been touting about was, you know, that Cliff Rosenberger was the youngest Speaker of the House at, I think, 32 years old or something when he became Speaker. Perhaps that was too young. Perhaps that's far too much authority and influence and power and, shall we say, being influenced upon by lobbyists who've been there for decades to overcome without some more life experiences of your own. If you also take a look at his particular employment history, it's fairly clear that he's basically worked in and around government pretty much his entire career. The only one you could quote-unquote call a private was that he was an advanced event planner for Mitt Romney's presidential campaign.
Yeah, see. But
he worked in D.C. He worked for Dick Kempthorne. You know, he was in the military, then he was working for Dick Kempthorne and all these others, and then he comes back and he runs, you know, for a seat in Ohio in the legislature, becomes Speaker. It doesn't seem like he's had much experience. Now, I'm not speaking, you know, he may have, like, as a teenager, flipped burgers at McDonald's like many of the rest of us.
Sure, sure.
Or something equivalent. But the point is that in his adult life, he's only been involved in government. And I'm not sure that's healthy, Chuck.
That, in fact, is dangerous because you need a little bit of breadth of experience in order to really grasp what's going on out there. And if you just always been in and around government, yeah, you have lots of government experience, but that's not necessarily a good thing. That's why in the United States, we have always sort of revered the citizen legislator. Now, have we actually done it much? No. There are guys that spent their entire career, I'm thinking Henry Clay, Daniel Webster, in and around politics, Thomas Jefferson. But look at George Washington. George Washington took the presidency not because he wanted to be president real bad, but because he wasn't sure anybody else could do what needed to be done at that time. Now, you might think that was something. He understood how much cachet he had, and he wanted to hold the country together because, let's face it, you had 13 very different states who understood their sovereignty very well at the time, and he wanted to hold it all together. So he was not a career politician. The history of the United States is full of career politicians, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad. And it's much better if you have guys who have a breadth of experience that come in and are legislators for a time and then leave. Although I am not, we're out of time essentially, but I am not a big proponent of term limits, and I'll tell you why. It has empowered the parties. It has empowered guys like Cliff Rosenberger, because what happens? Well, if you're actually someone who wants to drain the swamp in Ohio, all they have to do is wait you out. They have to wait out until your term's over if you keep getting reelected. And then what do they do? Leadership makes sure that you don't step into the other house. And leadership makes sure that you can't remount an election campaign after you've sat out for your term, after your term limit is up. They work actively to keep you out.
Yeah, it's true. Now, so, you know, I got to say this. I know our time's about up, but I got to say this. Our big problem is when we find statesmen and stateswomen to go to these offices to do the right thing, to drain the swamp, they're usually the ones who self-impose term limits on themselves.
Exactly.
And those are the ones we would rather not have term limits.
Yes, we want them in there, but they have other things to do.
Yeah, they have other things to do. That's right.
That's right. Well,
so it's kind of a you know, two-edged sword there with that. But
and we have a thing to do, and that is sign off.
That is it.
That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.